You're listening to The Brian Lehrer Show on WNYC. I'm Sarah Gonzalez filling in for Brian. The most dangerous place in the world got safer, Honduras. 3 years ago, it was leading the world in homicides, and tens of thousands of kids from Honduras fled to the United States on La Bestia. Remember that? The freight train where kids were riding on top of. Well, many of the kids in Honduras feel a little safer in their home country now. They're not coming over as much. And joining me now to talk about the millions of dollars the United States has spent trying to make Honduras safer is Sonia Nazario, Pulitzer Prize-winning author of Enrique's Journey, The Story of a Boy's Dangerous Odyssey to Reunite with His Mother. It follows a young boy traveling alone from Honduras to the United States. And you may have seen Sonia's opinion piece in the New York Times recently. She makes the case that U.S.-funded violence prevention programs should be expanded to other Central American countries. Sonia, thank you for joining me.
Hi, Sarah. Glad to be here.
All right. So, Sonia, the details that you give in this New York Times piece about what you saw in Honduras 3 years ago and what you're seeing now, they're pretty incredible. Can you just tell us a little bit about how things have changed?
Sure. Well, you know, I should stress that this is not all of Honduras. These are pilot programs that I was seeing in three neighborhoods that the U.S. has funded and started a couple of years ago. But a few years ago in this neighborhood where I spent time, this was the most dangerous neighborhood in the murder capital of the world, San Pedro Sula, which the second largest city in Honduras. And Honduras had the number one homicide rate in the world of countries not at war, second only to Syria in the number of people being killed. And a few years ago, you did not go out in broad daylight if you were a child. There was a 6 p.m. curfew imposed by the gang. It was a ghost town. And in the morning, bodies littered the streets. The 18th Street gang, which started in Los Angeles, where I live, they would set up a checkpoint. And when cars approached, they asked them, where are you going? Where are you from? And if you didn't answer the right way, they would just shoot you right on the spot. So, the gangsters, the six gangs that controlled this neighborhood, controlled it so brazenly that one day the cops came upon four gangsters playing soccer, and they were playing with the head of someone that they had just executed. So this was complete control by the gangs and complete fear by the population. And the U.S. went in with these violence prevention programs, and with the help of many wonderful community leaders, they've seen in this one neighborhood a 62% reduction in homicides in 2 years. I say we do more of that.
And you write about a house that used to be called Casa Loca, Crazy House, and it was used by gangs for torture and murder. You describe a teen girl who was hacked to death there and then buried under a tree. And this house is now being used by a pastor who's getting funding from some of these U.S. Programs to reduce violence. He's renamed the house Casa de la Esperanza, which means House of Hope. And there's a story in this piece, and you talk about what he's using that money for. He's received soccer uniforms, soccer balls, and this pastor is now holding these soccer games between a team of killers and a team of non-killers. So these are 20 assassins from one of the local gangs. One who you write was wearing a number 11 jersey and tells you that he killed 121 people, charging $220 per hit. And they're playing. What is the point of playing with, you know, people who haven't killed someone before?
Well, I think what the U.S. was trying to do in funding people like Pastor Pacheco, really an extraordinary person, is 2 years ago we had this huge flow of kids coming unaccompanied to the United States, many of them going to the New York area, and they were desperate to stem that flow. And what we realized is something that we've also realized in this country: you cannot arrest your way out of a gang problem. You have to implement violence prevention programs and intervention programs. And so what the U.S. started to do was look at these, really try to map the violence down to the corner. Where are the shootings taking place? And what they saw was that this neighborhood was the most dangerous. And then they went to the community leaders, like this priest, 17 of them in this neighborhood, and tried to organize them better and fund some of their activities to take back these public spaces. So they have done these things for people like Pastor Pacheco, and they've opened, outreach centers in this neighborhood to try to provide mentors for children, vocational training, help them get jobs, start soccer leagues. So, you know, there's nearly a million children in Honduras who neither work nor go to school because they can't afford to go to school. So you have all these kids with a lot of time on their hands and the gangsters trying to recruit them. So you want to put those kids in soccer leagues and keep them busy and doing good things. And that's what this pastor is really trying to do. We've also implemented programs in Los Angeles, where I live. We have the Gang Youth Reduction Program, and one of the elements of that was to look at kids who are at risk of going into gangs. There's like 9 risk factors, and if you have 4 or more of those, you put these kids into a full year of family counseling and their families to try to change the dynamics of those families. And then finally, we did intervention. In Honduras, you can totally murder someone in broad daylight and get away with it. 96% of homicides result in no convictions. They don't go to court. They don't get a verdict. And so we paid a nonprofit in Honduras to investigate all murders in 7 pilot neighborhoods, including this one, Rivera Hernandez. And now in those neighborhoods, half of the cases that they investigate are resulting in guilty verdicts. So gangsters now know you cannot kill someone and get away with it. So those are some of the things that are starting to turn around these pilot neighborhoods. It's not all of Honduras, but where we're trying to do this.
And we'll get to some of this, the process involved in testifying against the people who are committing these murders in a bit. But first, between $95 and $100 million has gone to Honduras for these violence prevention programs. And the funding has come under attack from isolationists who say that the U.S. should worry about the U.S., but it's also come under attack from the left as well.
Yeah. Yeah, you know, I think spending $100 million, and I understand, the impulse that the United States has not exactly been a genius at nation building. And I, like you, pay a lot of taxes, and I want to see my tax money spent well, especially if it's going to other countries. But with $100 million, you are helping to reduce homicides to the point that in this neighborhood, the number of children fleeing because of violence, because they're being recruited by the gangs and told, you're going to join or we're going to exterminate your whole family, the number of kids fleeing has been cut in half in 2 years. And Honduras has gone from the number one sending country of unaccompanied immigrant children to the United States to now number 3. So this has been very effective in terms of what the United States wants, which is fewer of these children fleeing from these countries to the United States. If you look at just what we spend to shelter these children when the Border Patrol catches them, typically they're put in one of more than 80 detention facilities for about a month until Health and Human Services figures out who they can release this child to so that then they can go on to immigration court and see if they'll be allowed to stay in the United States legally or not. That month of sheltering costs the United States nearly $1 billion a year. So you're not counting the amount of money we're spending to the Border Patrol to catch these kids, to fly them around to these shelters, to fly them to their parents, the legal costs of operating courts to process these kids' asylum claims. This is billions of dollars. So you compare that to $100 million, and this is just a really smart investment on the part of the U.S. government.
So you make the argument that the U.S. is benefiting from these violence prevention programs in Honduras.
They're benefiting, and it's also a humane thing to do. The United States helped create these problems in these countries. You don't have to go back to, you know, treating Honduras as the original banana republic and staging the Contras out of Honduras and arming this whole country and what that did. But more recently, since the mid-90s, we strengthened laws that allowed a deportation of permanent residents who had committed certain DUI, drug offenses, and we have deported tens of thousands of criminal gangs gangsters back to Honduras, where they started the truly violent gangs in Honduras. In this one neighborhood, they traced the violence back to a guy called Nacho, who was from Long Beach, California, with the Vatos Locos gang. So it's a very direct line in terms of the surge in this violence. And secondly, I think it's U.S. drug use. We use more illegal drugs than any nation on earth, and we squeeze Colombia in terms of they're producing and shipping cocaine, and then the violence surged in Mexico, and we squeezed Mexico, and then a lot of the narco cartels moved their operations to Central America, where a few years ago, 4 out of 5 drug flights were landing in Honduras. After the 2009 coup, the country was very unstable, and many drug operators, narco cartels, took advantage of that. And really, that's what led to a lot of the surge in violence, that these cartels and the gangs that often work for them were recruiting kids to work for them and to control this turf to move these drugs north. So I think we bear some responsibility for the mayhem that's occurring in Honduras. But I think bottom line, it's in our self-interest to try to reduce this migration and keep and improve conditions in Honduras so more children can live safely in their own country.
And the United States ambassador to Honduras seems to agree that the funding is going toward repairing harms that the United States has inflicted, like our demand for drugs, and, you know, after we deported tens of thousands of gang members, gangsters, back to Honduras. Listeners, do you agree? Is it in the United States' interest to send money for violent prevention programs in other countries? Give us a call, 212-433-WNYC. That's 212-433-9692. And we are speaking with, if you're just joining us, Sonia Nazario. She is a Pulitzer Prize-winning author of Enrique's Journey, the story of a boy's dangerous odyssey to reunite with his mother. And she has an opinion piece in the New York Times sort of about the changes that she's seen in Honduras in recent years. Sonia, this summer, a bill was introduced in Congress to suspend security aid to Honduras because of corruption and human rights violations, including the police. They were violating the rights of their citizens, sometimes resulting in deaths. What is your response to that?
Well, I think that Honduras is an incredibly corrupt place, and that corruption is endemic in the government, and it's certainly endemic in the police. And many human rights, proponents have been murdered. More than 50 journalists have been murdered in recent years in Honduras. So I certainly understand that we want to sanction governments and police departments that are, you know, committing extrajudicial murders. And you see that in this neighborhood in Rivera Hernandez. Back in October, when the gangsters killed a cop, the cops, allegedly, it's still being investigated, but everyone believes this is what happened, they went in and they arrested 8 gangsters, and one of them, a 15-year-old, was found tortured and shot to death the next day, and 2 of the other gangsters have never surfaced. So you do not want to be funding people who are engaging in extrajudicial killings. I lived through, as a teenager, the dirty war in Argentina. I had some of my best friends killed by that military regime, which was supported by the U.S. government. So I understand these issues very well. But I think that we need to be pragmatic also in terms of trying to fund programs that improve conditions in these countries. And a lot of this funding, by the way, does not go to the government. The U.S. has gotten fairly smart about funding implementers, U.S. companies that go in and hire Hondurans to implement these programs. And a lot of this work is being done by the State Department itself. They tend to not give money to people like this pastor. They give equipment and other things because of these corruption issues. So I think that they have tried to get around some of those issues by not giving money to the Honduran government.
Okay. And I think I want to go to some callers. We have Anthony in Connecticut. Anthony, you're on WNYC.
Yeah. I hear what this lady's saying, but it's why do you want to blame the U.S. taxpayer for that? That's not my fault. what this government has done. And you said it yourself, you can't pay your way out of this gang situation. But meanwhile, American schools, American kids are in gangs. American kids are killing kids. Our schools are in terrible shape. We don't have enough supplies of our own. When is America going to get out of paying for the whole world? And when are everybody going to stop blaming us for our government? I'm not blaming the Honduran government for their situation. I'm not blaming Afghanistan for their situation. I just wish you would stop blaming us and let us clean up our own country first. People like that are going to drive people to. That's why people are looking at Trump, because we make us feel even more disenfranchised in our own country, because all the money, all the people that are out of work in America, and they want to spend all this money overseas all the time.
Okay, Anthony.
What about American citizens?
All right, Sonia, I'll let you respond to that. But Anthony, stay on the line with us.
Anthony, I totally get your point of view. I've covered social issues in the U.S. as a reporter for 30 years, and I've seen all of those problems here. But I think we have certain strategic interests in places like Honduras. We have, a base there, a military base, and we have used Honduras in that regard. And I just think that I think that we are a compassionate country, and we are able to extend to helping some of our neighbors that are witnessing horrific violence. We have said that we will help refugees from places that come, people who are coming and fleeing violence from places like Honduras or Syria or other nations. And I think it's just more economically feasible to help them in their home countries and address the root causes of why people are coming here than to spend 10 times more once they are here and processing those people and, picking them up at the border and putting them in detention facilities, which are very expensive, and processing them through our courts. It's just more humane and more cost efficient to do this than to do it the other way. And we've spent a lot of our money on suppression and funding law enforcement and corrupt police departments. I think this is a much better, if we're going to spend money, I think this is a much better and more cost-effective way to spend money.
So, Anthony, what are your thoughts on that the U.S. spends money on housing the immigrants that we're going to later deport anyways, and that it's sort of a drain on our resources to not do something?
And then I'll say the same thing, Sarah. I'm going to still say the same thing. What about American people who are homeless? What about American people who are losing their homes right now? There are people being evicted from their homes. What about the guy that just went through the flood? His mortgage was sold to another company, and he had flood insurance, and all of a sudden it was sold to another company. He doesn't have flood insurance. He got to rebuild his house on his own now. I mean, come on. What about Americans? I'm not talking about what my country did, but I'm talking about what about taking care of Americans first?
All right. Okay. Thank you, Anthony, for your call. I want to go to another caller, Gloria in Westchester. You're on WNYC.
Yes.
Hi, Gloria.
Hi. The first law of economics is the law of supply and demand. Nobody wants to address the issue of the demand that comes from the United States and Europe. As long as there is a demand, there is always going to be a supply. First, the suppliers for Colombia and continue to be. Then the cartels move to Mexico and now Central America. It is the demand that is causing all these crimes, and nobody's addressing the demand.
The demand for drugs?
The supply.
The demand for drugs, you mean? Yeah, okay.
Yes.
All right. Thank you for your call, Gloria.
I totally agree with that. I think that we squeeze in one place and the violence moves to another place. And until we deal with that demand in this country for drugs, whether it's more drug courts or, God forbid, legalizing drugs, all drugs, Portugal has legalized small quantities of all drugs. And it was very messy for the first 5 years. Crime went up. But now, 15 years into it, crime and drug use have declined in Portugal. And so I think we can look to what other countries are doing in this regard to try to lower drug use in the United States. If not, we're simply going to be moving this mayhem and violence around to different countries.
All right, and I want to go to Anna in Warren City, New Jersey. Anna, you're a social worker. You have questions about how the money is being spent?
Right, how it's going to be distributed is my question. Your guest touched briefly on it, but I wanted to just ask for if she has any more details on that. I lived in Costa Rica for several years back, and although Costa Rica is not plagued by that much as Central America is, I am familiar with corruption, government corruption. When it comes to large amounts of foreign money coming in, it often really does not reach the general population. So my question is, she mentioned that maybe this money would be distributed via other avenues other than government entities. As a social worker, having lived internationally, I have a vested interest in the global population of our youth, not just here in the United States. And I'm just interested to see, would some of this money maybe be going to universities and social work departments putting on programs for youth? Like, how is the money actually, do we know any more about that, how the money is actually going to reach the population?
And Sonia, there's a new, 911 system that was set up, right?
Yeah, that was more paid by the Honduran government, but the money, some is going to universities. There are these violence observatories that at universities that try to track where the violence is occurring, so that the U.S. can really map where to try to find these hot spots. The goal is to really concentrate your efforts in the worst places of violence, not spread it all around Honduras. But look, so that's why they've started in the three worst neighborhoods in the city of San Pedro Sula. The money is also going to local Hondurans, like this priest. But a lot of the money is going to the State Department, unfortunately, to the bureaucracy and to implementers. They're called Beltway Bandits that operate out of the D.C. area. And these are companies that USAID and other State Department agencies give the money to implement programs in Honduras, because they feel that these U.S. agencies are more accountable, less corrupt, and they can do kind of all the bureaucracy and paperwork that's required to implement these programs in neighborhoods like Rivera Hernandez. So a lot of the outreach centers, for example, are operated by Creative Associates International, which is out of Washington, D.C. So a lot, unfortunately, half of the money is going to the State Department or these U.S. implementers. And I argued in my piece that more of the money, I mean, when I give money to a philanthropic effort, I want 90% of that to go to the people that I'm trying to help. And if half of it is going to people in the United States or right. U.S. companies, I see that as a problem. And I know USAID and other State Department agencies have been working to try to increase the amount of money that goes to these local entities and to Hondurans. And I think that we need to push our government to do much more of that.
All right. Sonia, I mean, it's still not a great picture in Honduras. Last year, 570 people were killed in the country, which has a population that's smaller than New York City's. And you write about some pretty horrific things that you've seen and heard from going on still. You say that unaccompanied minors from Honduras are not coming in as big of groups as we saw a couple years ago, but that kids from other Central American countries are still coming in at large numbers.
Yeah, and the UN has interviewed these kids from Central America, and they have deemed that 6 in 10 of these kids, the primary driver, unaccompanied children from Central America coming to the United States, is that they are fleeing violence. They have been threatened 1-3 times and have been told, if you don't join the gang or you don't pay a war tax, if you have a business, we are going to exterminate your whole family. So I want to stress that Honduras is still a very dangerous place. In this neighborhood I was in, even though homicides have gone down 62% in 2 years, I had to be accompanied by evangelical pastors walking from one block to another, or I faced being killed by the gangs. There is a school there that is still closed, shuttered, because the teachers have been threatened when they are coming to the neighborhood that they will be killed if they operate this school. Children cannot walk from one part of this neighborhood to another. Family members cannot walk from one part of this neighborhood to visit family members in another part of this neighborhood for fear of being killed by a rival gang. So this is still an incredibly dangerous place. Okay. But what I'm trying to say is there's a glimmer of hope here, and we should do more of this and create greater glimmers of hope in an effort to improve conditions in these places and save money.
All right, Sonia Nazario, thank you for joining us. We're going to have to leave it there. Sonia is a Pulitzer Prize-winning author arguing that U.S. funding has made a difference in Honduras and arguing that more money should be sent in other South American countries. You're listening to The Brian Lehrer Show on WNYC. I am Sarah Gonzalez. I'm sitting in for Brian. And coming up, we're talking sexism in the Olympics. Stay with us.